Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
4829, hey Bees, what about Forrest Whitley? What if he makes a huge improvement? It'd be great. I'm not expecting anything from Forrest Whitley. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I'm just not expecting anything from Forrest Whitley. I know that he exists. I know that he's on the 40-man roster. He's not a myth. He's not a mystery. He is a man. I'm not expecting anything from him. If he proves me wrong, great, but I'm not falling for it again. Dusty Baker was on with Mad Dog Russo. MLB Network is doing they're going around spring training and going to every team. They were with the Astros, their first team, defending champions. If you go to their Facebook, they had interviews with Jose Altuve, Kyle Tucker, Jeremy Pena. Pena met Derek Jeter this year, by the way, at the Reggie Jackson golf tournament. Houston Astro great Reggie Jackson, by the way. But he also, Mad Dog Russo had Dusty Baker on, which Mad Dog Russo has the strangest way to ask questions literally everywhere. He's like, hey, yeah, you won a World Series last year. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Go ahead. He's the weirdest interviewer ever. But anyways, he had Dusty on, and he was talking to him about last year, winning the World Series, all of that. And Dusty, he kind of hopes that they can stop talking about last year.
Can't live in the past. When I think of, some of the greats of the game, that the managers and coaches that have won more than one, to a man almost. I remember talking to Bill Walsh, years ago. And I remember talking to, guys like, Pat Riley and Phil Jackson. And, you look back on Vince Lombardi's career. I mean, you have to figure out a way, how to repeat. Every year is different. But that's the challenge of it. And, to play a daily game like this, you have to be prepared daily. And you got to keep your guys motivated, keep them prepared. But, this is a special group of guys here that, I don't have to do too much of that. Because these guys, believe in themselves. They believe in each other. And they believe that, we can win. So, I got a special group of guys here. And I'm very happy to, to be leader of the band.
Oh, it's great to hear Dusty Baker again. I love listening
dropped,
to Dusty.
Oh, he dropped.
He's king name drops. He dropped four names. Bill Walsh, Pat Riley, was it Phil Jackson, yep. And then Vince Lombardi. He dropped four names in that bite, which, any Dusty Baker soundbite, he name drops. I met Dusty in the offseason. He came over and asked for Elvin Hayes' autograph, and I met Dusty. I love Dusty Baker. I always have.
He asked for Elvin's autograph?
He did.
Wow.
He did. He asked for Elvin's autograph for his son.
And not yours?
No, he doesn't know who I am.
Well, he should.
I don't know if he should.
Killer Bees? Come on.
I'm at best a minor local celebrity at the absolute best. But I met Dusty, and Dusty's awesome. Dusty's great. I've always loved Dusty.
You remember now a year ago when my buddy tried to get in the game and his tickets weren't working and being scanned, all he did was say, hey, my buddy got these tickets from Jeremy Branham, and they rolled out the red carpet, gave him a complete VIP access without needing tickets.
Don't believe it.
It was amazing.
Yeah, I don't believe any of that.
Well, but he verified it for you in person. It happened.
I never met the guy.
You met Sly. He told you that.
I don't think so.
At a remote. He sure did.
Oh, at a remote?
Yeah.
Was he the one at the haircut place?
I don't think
I met this Sly guy.
Okay.
Pretty sure I haven't met Sly.
I think he also said it on the phone one day where he said, there's no question about it. I said they were Jeremy Branham's tickets. They just let me right in the door.
I mean, I know you've told me that a million times. I just don't believe you.
just like another day with the N's and a Y.
Lemmy says Dusty's just a dude, and what a career he has from his playing days today. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. Like, uh-huh. A side topic. He definitely belongs in the Hall of Fame. And Dusty, I trust him.
Now, what if you separated the careers as a baseball player alone?
He's a Hall of Fame manager.
Is he a Hall of Famer as a baseball player?
I don't think so.
I don't either. But I think as a manager, you got to give him his props and say there's absolutely no question he's a Hall of Fame manager.
He's what, top seven wins all time now? He has the World Series.
Yep.
He's absolutely a Hall of Fame manager.
He's the only manager to manage five different teams to a division title and the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Dusty has Scott Rowland's numbers. He doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
He has one top five MVP. He's a two-time All-Star. Like, Dusty's not a Hall of Fame player.
From a manager,
Less than 2,000 hits, less than 250 homers. He's not a Hall of Famer.
Giants, player. Cubs, Astros, mm-hmm. Nationals.
I mean, he's top 10 all-time wins. He's a Hall of Fame manager for sure.
No question.
Johnny B. Baker is a Hall of Fame manager. But what he's talking about there, the hangover, which a lot of times the hangover effect is real. Like, they get fat, they get happy. Who knows what Yordan Alvarez was doing, where he reports to camp with a sore hand. Lance McCullers got the sore elbow, blah, 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 blah. Like, there's already a couple of signs of, like, I don't think either one's too severe, and I'm okay with it, but it's like, you don't love seeing this, especially, you know, in February. You report some soreness a little bit later on in the year, that sort of thing. But do you think, first and foremost, separating the Astros from it in the 2023 Astros, do you think the reality of a hangover after winning a championship exists?
I lived it.
Yeah.
It's absolutely no question. They won the title in 94, the Rockets, and in 95, they came back just believing the Clippings. They came back thinking it was going to be the same team doing the same thing the same way, and everything was going to be sunshine and roses. And that's why the Clyde Drexler trade had to happen, because the coaching staff led by Rudy knew it wasn't working. Something was different. The guy's attitude was not the same. They weren't all on the same page. So they had to shake things up. And boy, did they. And they traded Otis Thorpe for Clyde Drexler, and it changed everything, because now you brought in a guy that was hungry, a guy that hadn't gotten a championship. That was the one thing missing from his resume in Clyde. And so it changed the mentality of every single person in that locker room.
Especially Vernon Maxwell.
Well, and some was good, some was bad. Vernon went one way. But guys like Mario Elie and Sam Cassell and guys that kind of befriended Clyde and said, I understand that this dude is real. And Robert Ori even said the same thing. They were like, hey, he's never won one. We can feel a different energy from the fact that this might be his last chance to go get one. Let's go get another one. And in the process, get him one too. And they all kind of bonded together. Look, they were a six seed. That shows you how much that they were just kind of going through the motions. And then they became the only six seed to win an NBA title, and it was amazing.
Yeah, I absolutely think it exists. I think it's case for, like, case by case. I don't think it exists on every single team. Certainly existed with that Houston Rockets team, you know, winning a title, finishing sixth in the Western Conference. You tell the story about Clyde kind of shaking everything up. I don't think that the Astros will be like that. Like, do we see them struggle out of the gates, potentially? Do we see them, you know, starting the season red hot? You know, maybe not. I also think, though, because of what is, like, transpired with this team over history, where they are the scapegoats of this sign-stealing scandal era of Major League Baseball, even though Mookie Betts says that it definitely existed whenever he was with the Red Sox in 2018 and had the best offensive year he's ever had by a mile, by the way. I think because of that, the Astros stay hungry. Like, I think that the Astros want to separate themselves from other teams. Like, they've won two World Series titles. They want more than that in this generation. Maybe they feel a little bit vindicated from the 2017 title by winning last year's title. I think they're hungry for dynasties. I think they're hungry to go back-to-back. You know, there's not been a Major League Baseball team in this millennium that has won back-to-back. The Astros have the chance to go back-to-back.
Did it in the late 90s was the last time?
Their last year, they won three in a row. I think it was 98, 99, yep, 2000. Yep. So no team in this millennium has won back-to-back World Series titles, something that the Astros have the opportunity to do. And I think because of what has transpired the last five, 6 years, because how everybody else views this team, I do think that it kind of fuels the fire within the walls of that organization.
Well, Abreu could be your Clyde in a lot of ways, too. A guy that hasn't won one that you want to win one for, that wants to be a part of what you have going to keep the engine going forward, right? But I think more so than what the Rockets had is this team's loaded, right? I think the Rockets, even if they kept it intact from the year they beat the Knicks, coming back, there was no one thought that they were going to run away with anything, and there was a lot of concerns about where they were going to fall in the landscape of the Western Conference. When you look at this Astros team, there's no one that is saying anything that says they're not going to be as good or better than they were a year ago. So that already sets a different tone, because now you've got a deep team, you've got guys that can fill in for guys, you've got insurance policies, you've got pitching, you've got hitting, you've gotten better offensively, and you look at it and say, they should be as good or better, and they have all the personnel to do it. The Rockets didn't. But they also have a nice mix of guys, too, that seem to be very grounded, very humble, especially an Altuve-type guy, that, you know, and I think that they also want to set their legacy. Now it's not just about putting 17 behind him. Now it's, how good can we be to set a legacy for the history of Major League Baseball?
You know what else I think plays to the Astros' favor in this, like relating it to the Rockets then versus the Astros now? Like, baseball's not a huge effort sport. Like, you're not going to out-hustle somebody on a baseball field like a basketball court. You know what I mean? Like, basketball, you need to win the 50-50 balls. You got to get the loose balls. You got to out-rebound somebody. You got to make the extra defensive rotation. You have to hustle. You have to be hungry. You have to have that drive. Baseball, you get to, like, sit at your position and wait for the ball to come to you. Like, you sit in the box trying to be patient to get a good pitch to hit. I think that, like, baseball is also one of those sports where it's different than football and basketball, where it's like physical. You have to have this urgency. You have to have this sense of being fast with everything. Baseball is the opposite. Like baseball, you try not to play too hard because a lot of times you play too hard and you get out of your element.
Yeah, no, you're right. Look, it's not the same as the kind of nonstop running and effort that you get in soccer and basketball, or you know, in hockey or sports where it's go, go, go all the time. And there's a whole lot of hurry up and wait. But at the same time, when you do have to perform, you do have to perform at a certain level. So I look at this team, and I like the makeup and the structure in the clubhouse, because that means so much. Because you don't have too many guys with that Bregman-type personality that's brash, that's overly showboating and outspoken and doing all the things that can sometimes take you down the wrong path. You got too many guys that are professionals, both on and off the field, that are worried about keeping that singular focus, looking for new motivation. Like you said, maybe it's the motivation of trying to be the first team in this millennium to repeat. Maybe it's because they want to carve their legacy in terms of being a dynasty instead of just one of the good teams of the last 10 years. And so you believe that the people in the locker room are, and it starts with your manager too, a been there, done that guy, but an old school guy that is not going to let up and is going to keep pressing all the right buttons and giving guys days off, and also not afraid to tell a guy if he's not doing it right. I think that that's the right makeup for why this team won't have a big drop-off.
1185 says, first, just ask Nick Saban. The hardest thing to do is in sports is to repeat. Do you believe that to be true? Like, is it harder to repeat, or is it harder to win that first one?
I'd say it's harder to repeat. When's the last time? It just doesn't happen.
It's also hard for a team like the Pirates to win, though.
No, that's.
But they made a lot of missteps too. They unload.
It depends on your organization.
Reds, like you could go down the list.
It depends on your organization what the question is. Like if you're asking the Pirates, the Nationals,
the Lions,
like these bad organizations throughout sports, is it harder to win or to? Well, they can't repeat if they don't.
Right.
Win. So, but I think you would say like, who are the last teams to repeat?
Royals won it in 2015.
Yeah, you have the Yankees in baseball. The Pats were the last team in the NFL.
You've had some college teams do it.
Spurs and Warriors
were the last one, so that's more recent.
I don't know if you remember this or not, Joe, but the Bulls had a guy named Michael Jordan. They did,
yeah,
too.
But
that was last millennium,
right? Yeah,
like in the last millennium, it's like how many repeats have we? I mean, look, you know, the Giants—they won 3 World Series in 6 years. They missed the playoffs the years they didn't win those World Series.
I think it's the same. Honestly, I do.
Yeah, that's probably a fair
I think
question.
It's the same.
That's probably fair. I'm not concerned about a hangover. I think the Astros are the perfect like chemistry makeup of everything to go back, because you have position battles at catcher and center field. You have guys because of Dana Brown chasing contracts. You know, Pena's chasing a contract. Tucker, Fromber, and I think also the big factor is. I think the Angels and the Mariners and the Rangers are almost doing you a favor by going so all in. Like you have real competition, specifically with the Mariners.
Yeah, they like a horse race. Like they're right on your heels. They're making you continue the pace.
Yeah, they're pushing you.
I think the AL West is the best division in baseball. I really do. I think this division is going to be good. I think Seattle's going to be good. I think the Angels are going to compete to win like 85 games and for a wild card. I think the Rangers could compete to be, you know, a 500 team. It wouldn't shock me if the Rangers won 81 games.
That's what I said. That's why I said, and you guys, we've all been talking about it off the air as well as on the air, but my concern is that this division is not going to be the cakewalk it's been, and you're not going to have that big lead that you've had in years past where you can do so many different things and relax so much in the regular season to set up everything for the playoffs. I think it might be more of a grind, and that is one concern. But you know, to Joe's point, what I was saying is I believe that the makeup in this clubhouse, no matter where they're finding that motivation that keeps them going on a daily basis, I think internally you've got a great mix with the veterans and the young guys, too, that's going to help to make sure that they stay focused at all times on trying to continue this upward trend for the Astros and this long run of the golden age of Astros baseball.
Qualified with the point, Spurs never repeated. So what? Take one
every other
off
year. No, it's fine. Every other, never repeated, but every other year for what, 5-6 years?
Yeah,
they
won
a title.
But we were talking about back-to-back.
Oh, the back-to-back.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. How would you draft the quarterbacks based on their comps? Based purely on their comps. We have a few comps from these rookie quarterbacks and these rookies with a first-round grade. We're drafting only based on the comp, not the actual player. 713-780-3776. We'll let you know what we're talking about when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Matt Miller covers football for the NFL for ESPN. He put together a list of actual first-round grades to players. He has 19 NFL draft prospects with first-round grades. The three quarterbacks, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Will Levis. Interesting, no Anthony Richardson. Bijan Robinson is only running back. Two receivers, Jackson Smith and Jimma Jordan Addison. Michael Mayer, the tight end. He has three offensive tackles, Peter Skoronski of Northwestern, Broderick Jones of Georgia, Paris Johnson of Ohio State. Zero interior offensive linemen. Four edge rushers, Will Anderson, Miles Murphy, Tyree Wilson, Lucas Van Ness. One defensive tackle, Jalen Carter. Three corners, Devin Witherspoon, Joey Porter Jr., Christian Gonzalez. One safety, Brian Branch. Now, with every single one of those players, he put a player comp that we've seen in the NFL. I want to draft off the comps, who he listed these players as their player comps to. If you're the Texans, you're probably looking at the quarterbacks here and maybe the two defensive players, Jalen Carter, Will Anderson. Do we want to throw Tyree Wilson into the mix here for the sake of this conversation?
He's been climbing the charts.
All right, we'll throw Tyree Wilson into this conversation. For the three quarterbacks, his Bryce Young comp is Tua. So Tua is the Bryce Young comp. C.J. Stroud's comp is Dak Prescott, which is hilarious because the Cowboys have intrigue in C.J. Stroud, which is funny. And then for Will Levis, his comp is Matthew Stafford, which don't love that comp from an athletic point of view.
Not from an athletic point of view, but I think in terms of the careers, I thought you'd be happy with that.
That's why I said an athletic point of view.
Because I think that this is your Will Levis celebration.
That's why I said an athletic point of view.
I mean,
honestly, I think he's going to be more athletic than Matt. But there's some Matt Stafford was okay athletically.
He was okay.
Yeah.
But he was really good as a quarterback.
Sure. Yeah. That's why I said
on
athletic.
A really bad team. No, I'm not saying this to you per se. I'm saying that a lot of people sometimes when we say we're always breaking down measurables and intangibles. But sometimes people are so hyper focused on the measurables, they forget, like, from an intangible standpoint, when Matt Stafford played with a whole bunch of horse bleep Lions teams. Matt Stafford was a damn good quarterback. He just never got the recognition and attention and credit because he was playing on really bad teams. But there's a reason why he was also the highest paid quarterback in the league at one point as the quarterback of the Lions. Sure, it's about timing when your contract comes up, but it was because people believed he can throw the football. He could do what you need to do to be a good NFL quarterback.
For Will Anderson, he has the comp as Von Miller. For Tyree Wilson, his comp is Frank Clark. And for Jalen Carter, his comp is Fletcher Cox. So if we're the Texans and we're drafting on these six players, again, Tua's Bryce, Prescott is C.J. Stroud, Stafford is Levis, Vaughn is Will Anderson, Frank Clark is Tyree Wilson, Fletcher Cox is Jalen Carter. So our draft pool is Tua, Prescott, Stafford, Vaughn, Frank Clark, Fletcher Cox, which give me any one of those six guys and I'd be pretty happy with the results.
Even Tua?
At number two. Yeah, I'd be okay with Tua at number two.
Okay,
I'd be okay with Prescott at number two. Like they've been solid. Like Prescott's had a pretty good career to this point. And Tua's had some flashes where he's been good. I think if you finish with Tua, you'd be okay.
Okay, I think he's been very underwhelming as a pro. It goes back even to a discussion that I know it's a little bit shocking because of the discussions you and I've had in the past. I always believed that he had a higher ceiling, but I still believe he has a higher ceiling. And now there's medical concerns, not just with his ankle and the stuff that he brought into the league and came into the league with, but now it's concussions and other things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's been underwhelming as a pro, so that I would be very leery of that. But
I don't disagree with all that very much. But you're taking one of these players, Tua, Prescott, Stafford, Von Miller, Frank Clark, Fletcher Cox.
I think the best career of all of them, just based on just the names and the resumes, I think it's Von Miller. I think that Von Miller is the guy that has won multiple Super Bowls and done all the things that he's done and been a dominant, destructive force on the defensive side of the football to where you're saying if we were just drafting those players, I think he has to be number one.
Who are you going with here, Joe George? If you have to take one of these six players based on their comp, Tua Prescott, Stafford, Vaughn, Frank Clark, Fletcher Cox.
I hate this exercise.
Why?
Why? Because you hate exercise?
You don't, because my answer, non-quarterback?
Because my answer is Matt Stafford. Which means Will Levis.
You're going Stafford over Von Miller?
See, I don't know how you can do that.
See,
I don't
think
either.
That we discredit Matt Stafford because of a garbage organization. Like was a great quarterback at times, but the Lions are just this dumpster fire. Like if you put Matt Stafford anywhere else, Does he win more? And I think the answer is clearly yes. They've had awful defense, awful special teams. He's had like five head coaches in Detroit. And look what he did immediately as soon as he got to the Rams and had competency around him. Like, I think highly of Matt Stafford that if you flipped him in Rodgers, I don't think the Packers' success is that much different than what it was with Rodgers.
They probably win more.
So I think my answer
more?
They won one title with Rodgers.
Well, right, but there's a lot of circumstances that come into play there, but I don't know if I could say more. I don't think he makes all the throws and does the things that Rodgers
does. I was kind of trolling.
So my answer is Stafford. I love Von Miller, but to me, like...
Joe wants Will Levis at number two.
People last year after Matt Stafford won the Super Bowl, if you listen to like national sports talk, the conversation was, is Matt Stafford a Hall of Famer?
Sure.
Because he has good enough stats, and he finally won a ring. So you're telling me that I can guarantee... The Texans are going to be drafting someone that could be considered a Hall of Famer.
But Von Miller's a guaranteed Hall of Famer.
Yes, but he's not a quarterback.
He won a Super Bowl.
Won two.
He's just not a quarterback. Yeah, they won one together.
Like, I forgot about the Rams one, yeah.
He's just not.
With Von.
He's not a quarterback. So, like, I'm taking Matt Stafford over on Von Miller.
See, I think it comes down to Vaughn and actually Fletcher Cox. Like, that's the one to me, because Fletcher Cox has been really good. And he can do it from the inside, where it's like, man, I would love to have that. 6607 says Fletcher Cox. But Cox is my second. Like, give me Von Miller. Like, give me Von Miller to make an anchor edge rusher on my team for the next decade.
Yeah, that's why I said Von Miller, and I'm with you. I think that my second pick might be Fletcher Cox, because he's a poor man's Aaron Donald, and that's a great poor man's comp to be, because he doesn't get the accolades and he's not quite as destructive as Aaron Donald, but he's dominant, and he's dominant and been dominant and continues to be dominant for a great defense. You can anchor that defense with either one of those two guys, like you said, for the next 10 years. That's a pretty good move.
713-780-3776. Let's play the quarterback game, because let's assume that what DJ Bienemy is saying is accurate, that the Texans are going to draft a quarterback at number two, which I don't know if you can make that guarantee February 22nd, but let's operate with that. And Cody thinks that the Texans are destined to take a quarterback at number two as well. So let's eliminate the defensive players. We know where Joe George is going here. Joe George is going with Matthew Stafford. And again, we're taking Matt Miller's mocks, not his mocks, his comps from ESPN. He comped Bryce Young as Tua. He comped C.J. Stroud as Prescott. He comped Will Levis as Matthew Stafford. And we're drafting from the comps. So we have to go quarterback at number two. We have no other option. We're pot committed to QB. Cal McNair, Cool Cat Cal, says we need a quarterback. We don't care which of the quarterbacks, but we need a quarterback. We know Joe George is going Matthew Stafford. You have your choice of these three whenever they're rookies for the rest of their career. You going Tua? You going Prescott? You going Stafford?
Well, Stafford.
I am too. I think it's unanimous.
It's a no-brainer for me because of the resume, because of the fact, like we said, he was a good quarterback on bad teams. But he was still a good quarterback no matter how bad your team is, and we know how bad this team is right now. And the fact that if he continues to grow with his team, he's only going to get better. Now, unfortunately, he had to go somewhere else to win a Super Bowl, and you hope that that's not the case with the Texans and they don't do the missteps of the Lions. But of the other two, Dak had a major injury. Dak has been a guy that basically everybody wants out of town now, because when he needed to perform with a loaded roster this last year, he didn't do it. Tua, injury concerns from the time he left Alabama all the way now, with more concerns in the NFL and inconsistencies. The most consistent, best chance to win is give me Matt Stafford.
I don't think it's even up for debate. I'm going Stafford is easy for me over Tua and over Prescott.
The only thing I think is challenging with Tua is I didn't read it yet, but is there injury factored into the comparison, or is it just the quarterback play?
It's more about his size.
Because if you look at the quarterback play of Tua this year, and it's hard to – he's a tough one, because we think about injuries. We think about, you know, when he admitted after his rookie year that he didn't know the playbook that well. Obviously Miami with Brian Flores was kind of a dumpster fire with everything that was going on in the organization. I think it's hard to, like, pick and choose with Tua of, like, who he really is. And we can't get the injuries out of our minds.
That's where I'm at with Tua. Like, if Tua was always healthy, and look, I don't trust Tua to ever be healthy again for the rest of his career. I think he's Steve Young 10 years before Steve Young. Like, Steve Young had concussion issues whenever he was in his early 30s. Mm-hmm. Tua's having it in his mid-20s, and they're never going to go away. Like, Steve Young had to retire
like
because
Aikman.
Of concussion.
Aikman, same thing. Had to retire because of concussion.
Yeah, so, this fear for Tua is always going to exist. So that's why it makes it difficult to compare Bryce to Tua, because are we talking about the player alone eliminating the injury? It makes it tough. Let's talk about how we feel about these comps. 713-780-ESPN. Are they fair comps? Do we disagree? Who are our comps? 713-780-3776. If you had to pick one of those three quarterbacks, Tua, Dak, Stafford, which one are you picking? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I know one thing that you would be picking if we're comparing liquors, if you had option A, option B, or option Gentle Ben. Gentle Ben is the easy answer. The vodka, the gin, the bourbon, they're all part of the rotation for me, and they should be part of your rotation as well. Or maybe you're just a bourbon drinker. Okay, we'll try their bourbon. It's the best. Double platinum winner in the prestigious Ascot Awards. Maybe you like the vodka. Maybe you like vodka from Austin. Well, the vodka here in Houston's way better, Gentle Ben, and even the gin is fantastic as well. Why are they so good? Why are they so good? Because they use their innovative Percedo craft technology that's better in purity, aroma, and taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben, compare it to your brand, and you'll never go back. Ever since I've had that first sip, I've been a Gentle Ben man. You also will never go back. Why? Because it's smooth. It is clean. It eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Savor your drink. Don't be working through your drink. It doesn't need to be a chore. You can find Gentle Ben and vodka, Gentle Ben vodka, gin, the bourbon as well at Total Wine. Find it at Specs. Pick it up at your favorite liquor store on the way home, or if you're a guy who doesn't leave the computer, well, you can order it too at gentleben.com. Also, big news from Gentle Ben. Follow Gentle Ben Spirits on Instagram and Facebook for your chance to win 4 tickets and parking to the Rockets-Laker game on March 15th, and also an opportunity to meet Gentle Ben brand ambassador Robert Ory. That's right, Big Shot Bob. Follow Gentle Ben Spirits on Instagram and Facebook. Your chance to win 4 tickets and an opportunity to meet Robert Ory. Sit back with good company and raise a glass to the very best, Gentle Ben.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Matt Miller player comps for the rookie quarterbacks in this draft. For Bryce Young, it's Tua. For C.J. Stroud, it's Dak Prescott. For Will Levis, it's Matthew Stafford. Lemmy says the Tua comp makes me eliminate Bryce Young forever. Do you feel, first and foremost, that Tua to Bryce is a fair comparison?
I don't know.
I think it's pretty fair. Like, Tua's bigger.
I think that in terms of like the intangibles and the ability to make plays, I might think that Bryce Young is better than Tua.
One won a national championship, one didn't.
I understand that part of it, but I'm just saying, like, you know, that doesn't mean that you should, you know, belittle or think less of Bryce Young.
Bryce Young is little.
I know he is.
You said belittle. That's Bryce
I get
Young.
It, funny guy, dad joke guy. I'm just saying that's normally my
dad
job.
Joke guy.
I say that's normally my job. I think that Bryce. If that's your comparison and that's one of the things you use in criteria, that's one thing. But I think that the abilities as a quarterback to make decisions and lead, you know, you basically put the team on your shoulders on big drives and things like that, I'd give Bryce Young more credit than I would give Tua.
Yeah, I think that it's pretty similar. I think it's pretty close. Now, I think Bryce Young has more, like, shiftiness. I think he's side-to-side quicker. Their overall, like, point A to point B speeds probably relatively the same. I think their arm's about the same, too. Both of them are capable of throwing a deep ball. Neither one has, like, amazing zip on their fastballs over the middle, things like that. I think it's a pretty fair comparison. Like, the intangible factor, that's one of the reasons that I love Bryce Young, is because I really do. I know I give him grief for, you know, being the first Alabama QB1 since Blake Sims to not win a national championship. I do like Bryce Young's intangibles. I do like his it factor. It's one of my favorite things about Bryce Young and his shiftiness, things like that. I think it's a pretty decent comp. How about the C.J. Stroud-Dak Prescott comp?
I think that I almost think that that is a slap in the face to Dak Prescott, because I need to see a lot more from C.J. Stroud than just the national semifinal game to think that he has all of the intangibles and the not just the measurables, but the ability to make precise throws to be Dak Prescott. I think that Dak Prescott, as much as in this play, this last year's playoffs, rightfully so, he got absolutely crapped all over because he did not perform. But when you look at where he was drafted, where he came from, how quickly he basically ascended to take the Cowboys starting job and turn it into all the things that he's done and then overcome the injury, I think that C.J. Stroud has a little bit in my mind to be to go before I would compare him to even Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I think from like a player point of view, I think it's...
You're talking about body type?
Solid. Like, Dak was a much better runner coming out of college than C.J. Stroud, though, was. And he was more of like a bulldozing back. He was more like... You know, C.J. Stroud's not a bulldozing running back or quarterback.
I think he had strength and athleticism as opposed to a guy that doesn't, like you said, doesn't run as much. I don't think he's as durably sturdy as Dak.
Yeah, see, I thought Dak coming out of Mississippi State was a better version of Tim Tebow from an arm point of view. Like, he was a big quarterback that ran a lot in Dan Mullen's offense at Mississippi State, but had a much better arm. I loved Dak coming out of Mississippi State, but he was also a dude that was drafted in the fourth round. Whereas, like, C.J. Stroud, we're talking about being drafted in the top four. I think C.J. Stroud has, you know, more skill than Dak coming out of college. Now, Dak has been a really good pro, and it'd be difficult for C.J. Stroud to have like the kind of pro success that Dak Prescott has. How about the Levis Stafford comp?
Look, and you've seen a ton more on Levis than I have. I think that if that's the ceiling for Levis, then that's phenomenal, and he should be giddy, and everybody should, you know, look at that and say, that's amazing. But I think, again, another guy that's got a long way to go to get to a Matt Stafford-type career.
But these are, like, from, like, a skill set.
Yeah, and from a skill set, I think, again, I saw Matt Stafford play the Packers twice a year for a ton of games. And I saw him make unbelievable throws in tight windows and do all the things from on the run to in the pocket, long ball, short balls, all the different things that he needed to do. And I completely and 100% have always believed dude had unreal abilities as a quarterback. I'm not sold that Will Levis does yet, but that's not that to say that he could, and I might be convinced of that, and we'll see. But I think that that's a pretty high ceiling for Levis to for all that I have believed in and what I've seen of Matt Stafford.
Yeah. I think that the Stafford comp, in terms of like the arm skill, I think it might be a bit of a reach because I think Stafford's arm was like elite.
No question.
I think Will Levis has the best arm in this draft. Do I think that Will Levis's arm is going to be elite versus the rest of the NFL? Probably not. The comps that you see a lot are like Josh Allen, which that's a very high bar too.
That's a stretch.
Which one?
Coming out of college, I'm not sure that it is.
I guess
Allen was rough coming out. I mean, he was raw coming out of college.
I guess it depends on how you frame it.
Like, I think Levis is actually more Justin Herbert comp than a Josh Allen comp. And I'm not saying that he's the same skill set as Justin Herbert. But I think that, like, Herbert coming out of college had a bunch of questions coming out of Oregon. Now, it wasn't about his arm. It was more about, like, his leadership, his desire for football, that sort of thing. And then he fell behind Tua, which is ironic that Tua's given a Bryce Young comparison here. I think it's going to be that same thing with Levis, where Levis has all of these questions coming out of college. And it's like, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure about his statistics. I'm not sure about his numbers at Kentucky. Whenever we look at him as an NFL player, putting him at Matthew Stafford's arm caliber, I don't think is quite fair. I think Stafford has a more elite arm relative to the rest of the league, but I also think that Levis is a better athlete than what Stafford is. So it's like a rare combination of like a little bit of a hybrid, like best case scenario of a Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, more than a Matthew Stafford. So I really don't like this comp a lot for Will Levis. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, 1185. Bryce Young not winning the Natty is way unfair. He lost both wide receivers for the game. If they had both, they win. I think Bryce Young threw two interceptions in that game, by the way. I think whenever we're looking at college players in anything, stats, accolades, trophies, almost all of that is irrelevant as we look at them as an NFL draft prospect. So when I say that, I'm not really using it to belittle Bryce Young. I'm more using that to mock how much stock we put in college football success when we look at NFL prospects.
Yeah, look, I think that's the misconception a lot of people get caught up in and they want to focus on. Because we go back and forth with a Levis as opposed to what and the resources that he's had in the program that he played in as opposed to Ohio State and Alabama and Stroud and Young and all the five-star receivers and offensive linemen and the things that they had to work with. And so it is very unfair. And it really matters the most just in terms of how they measure up, what kind of athleticism that they have, and then the thing that it's harder to manage because of the fact that from the intangible standpoint, how many big games are you going to be in, and how big are those games? And the big game at Kentucky isn't even close to the big games for Ohio State and Alabama.
Look at Pat Mahomes, though. He's like the clutchest player in the NFL. How many games was he playing that were clutch out in the West
Plains? That's what I'm saying. It's impossible to say that Levis was ever put in a situation where you could accurately define he has that it factor. He has that intangible that good quarterbacks need to have. You just don't know.
Yeah, 3667, Bennett's back-to-back champ, no love, because he's limited. Because college football doesn't matter, to be honest, whenever you're looking at an NFL pro prospect very much. It matters a little. Jordan, I think the Will Levis and Matthew Stafford comp is a slap in the face to Stafford. Stafford won 10 games and threw for 3,500 yards his senior season. Levis has never thrown for over 3,000, and that's on a team constantly behind and having to throw the ball. Tell me you're not familiar with Kentucky football without telling me you're not familiar with Kentucky football. And again, I don't care about college stats. We're evaluating the prospect. How many points did Michael Jordan score per game at North Carolina? It does not matter. You're evaluating what a prospect is going to look like in the system that you have put in place.
How many times do we see in breakdowns and scouting reports on players, there's a really good chance he will take it to another level at the next level when he's allowed to spread his wings and do the things he's capable of doing? The system you play in and the school you play for and the coaching staff matters.
1317, how do you feel about this con? This is an interesting one. C.J. Stroud, Geno Smith.
I could see it.
I think it's pretty good.
I could see it.
I think it's pretty good. Like a big enough arm.
That's interesting.
Somewhat limited mobility, although Stroud showed more mobility against Georgia than he's ever showed in his entire life.
I think Geno was like that too, West Virginia, where it was like when he got on the move, you go, what are you not doing this more for? Like, why are you not using the athleticism you clearly have? That's interesting. Because Geno's one of those guys too, where like we forget what he was like coming out of college.
Oh, he's great. Great at West Virginia.
Pat White.
He was under the tutelage of one of the very best quarterback coaches that we've ever seen in college football.
Dana Bogerson.
Yeah, he was. He was. So was Pat White. 8788, Kyler Murray, Bryce Young, similar. I think that there's actually a pretty good comparison. Similar in terms of body type.
Where everybody's going to get lost.
I think their quickness is similar. Like, Kyler Murray's way faster. I think Kyler Murray's stronger. I think Kyler Murray has a way bigger arm than Bryce Young. But their size is similar, and I actually think that Bryce and Kyler are pretty similar in terms of side-to-side shiftiness.
And I actually think that Bryce Young's a more accurate passer than Kyler Murray.
There's no question.
Like you said, Kyler Murray, from a physical attribute standpoint, not height-wise, but physicality, strength, and size for his height, is so much different than Bryce Young. But Bryce Young, in terms of shiftiness, elusiveness, he can compete on that level, and then he's a better passer.
Yeah. He doesn't have as big an arm, but he's definitely more accurate. And I think he has more of the it factor. I think he'd be way better in terms of desire to want to play football. I have no doubt about that.
From film sessions to making big plays at the right time and doing the things that we need to do, I think Bryce Young is a good step above what Kyler Murray is.
2341, you guys spent an entire day belittling defense. Again, the belittle word, Bryce Young, my goodness. But now you're going to take a defender over quarterback. I'm confused.
Follow the comps. This is what we're doing. We're drafting off the comps, who they end up being.
Look, I'm okay if taking Will Anderson at number two and trading up for a quarterback. Like, there's many different avenues to get the quarterback. Do I think offense is more important than defense in today's day and age of the NFL? Yes, I absolutely do. But I think finding a quarterback has an element of randomness to it. Look at all the top quarterbacks right now and look where they were drafted. Pat Mahomes, number 10. Who else do we want to throw in the mix? Josh Allen fell to what, number 8? Who else are the top quarterbacks? Now, you might want to throw a Joe Burrow in there, which is the number 1 overall pick. Okay, fine. You can have Burrow. How about Justin Herbert, who went number 6. How about Jalen Hurts, who was drafted in the 2nd round? How about Tom Brady, who was drafted in the 6th? So, yes, I believe offense is more important than defense, but selecting a quarterback at number 2 doesn't guarantee success. And matter of fact, I'm going to do a case study tomorrow. I won't tell you what it is because I don't want anybody else to steal it. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. The HRMP listener line. Let's make mock drafts great again. This one from CBS Sports. Chris Trapasso with his latest mock draft. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll make mock drafts great again in 2 seconds. Dannon from Beaumont, sorry, fellas. I believe we are more than a QB away. Texans need to go best available player. I agree with you, Dannon from Beaumont. You agree that, or do you think quarterback at two, Blankers?
The more that I keep looking at these quarterback question marks, the more I start thinking about the fact that, and I heard the bench talking about all the other prospects that could be in play, but you know, from year to year, there's always going to be at the start, well before the start of a college football season, there are going to be up to 10 guys that could be first-round picks. And then by the end of the year, you've narrowed it down to, is there any, is there two, is there three? But I keep thinking about the boomer busts on all three of these guys and the concerns and thinking, if there are guys that are closer and better suited next year and there's multiples, then as bad as the roster is, maybe it is better to take the best available. As much as I was on the Bryce Young train and pushing it from day one and a couple years out, I have a lot of concerns now. As the entire workout and testing process and combine process is going to be so interesting to me, because I do have more concerns than I have beliefs in the top three quarterback.
Yeah, I want Will Anderson as the number two pick. If it's not Will, I'm cool with Jalen Carter. I really don't want quarterback at two. I want to trade up into the 5-6 spot and take the quarterback. And if you fall short of that, I have backup options as well that we can talk about later. 713-780-ESPN. 2484 has a C.J. Stroud comp that I thought of, too, after the Georgia game. I've said this, that C.J. reminds him of Deshaun Watson in that Georgia game. I thought the same thing. I thought it was a quarterback that can move pretty well, a quarterback that can throw really well. I saw a lot of Deshaun Watson and C.J. Stroud against Georgia.
If that's your comp.
He went number 12.
If that's your comp and doing the exercise that we just did with the quarterbacks, mm-hmm. does that put him above Stafford?
No, because I think Deshaun Watson's overrated. I think Deshaun Watson has great highlights. I think he takes way too many negative plays.
But you still think he's a top 10 quarterback in the league?
Yeah, bottom 10. Yeah, bottom top 10.
Bottom of the top 10.
Like round 9 or 10.
See, I don't even think he's that good. I don't think he's going to get back there. I just don't. I thought that a lot of his stats were inflated before because they were bad. They were playing from behind. They were doing a lot of what Dak did when he was getting big numbers. But I've seen too many mistakes that go with the success of what I've seen of Deshaun Watson as a Texan. And now with everything off the field and the missing time and all those other things, I'm less of a believer in Deshaun Watson. I'm still taking the Stafford, you know, as the best of that draft.
All right, let's take a look at Chris Trapasso's mock draft from CBSSports.com. This mock is outrageous. I don't know how this guy works at CBS Sports.
Have we had him on before?
I don't think so.
I thought we had him on once.
I don't think we have, but if we have, we probably never will again. For this mock, he's had the quarterback carousel already play out. So this is important to know for this mock. He has Derek Carr, David's brother, signing with the Jets. He has Aaron Rodgers being traded to the Las Vegas Raiders. He's got Lamar Jackson traded to the Atlanta Falcons. Ryan Tannehill signs with the New Orleans Saints. And Jimmy Garoppolo is headed to Tennessee. So let's keep those in the back of your mind. He also has trades in this mock draft. Chicago trades out of the number one overall pick, and they trade with Indy. They trade to the Colts. And with the number one pick in the NFL draft, the Indianapolis Colts, according to Chris Trapasso's NFL mock draft at CBSSports.com, selects Anthony Richardson, quarterback at Florida.
Oh, come on, man.
I'm not lying to you. This is what Trapasso's mock has. That's why I told you we're not going to have him on the air anymore.
Exactly, because it makes zero sense for a team that's ready to win right now, and Richardson being a guy that's probably 2 years away from getting a really significant look and chance. That just doesn't...
I will defend it real quick.
Okay.
Let me defend it real quick. The one spot that it makes sense, and I told you yesterday, I'm not touching Anthony Richardson. The one spot where I think Anthony Richardson would have more success than any other spot is with Shane Steichen and the offensive system he put together in Philadelphia. I think Anthony Richardson can come in and play day one in a Shane Steichen offense that is heavy, heavy, heavy running attack. He'll throw it 10, 12, 15 times a game, but you got Jonathan Taylor. You add the wrinkle of Anthony Richardson, who's a very good running quarterback. I think that Richardson would be lucky to be drafted by the Colts and Shane Steichen, but there's no way that they need to trade up to number one to get Anthony Richardson.
No, that was where I was going as well. If that's who the guy is that they're really focused on, and in your gut of guts, that's where you believe that Chris Ballard wants his guy, I don't think he's going to find any pushback in the top three picks that's going to prevent him from getting his guy at number four.
You can even probably trade down.
I think you're right.
You probably could even trade down. So anyways, he has the Texans going Bryce Young, which has been a very popular pick for the Houston Texans. Jalen Carter, 3 to Arizona. Will Anderson falls all the way to 4, and Chicago gets their guy anyways, as Chicago takes Will Anderson. And then Will Levis goes number 5 to Carolina. C.J. Stroud falls to number 8. To Baltimore. People like whenever we mention Bijan Robinson. Bijan Robinson in this draft slides all the way to number 30, to the Philadelphia Eagles. So the Eagles don't have still to take him at 10, but they still get him at number 30. We've been playing the exercise where we know what the Texans do in this mock draft. They take Bryce Young at number 2, and then we put ourselves in the position of Nick Caserio with the 12th pick. In this scenario, he has the Texans taking Jordan Addison, the receiver from USC. He has the Jets at 13 taking Peter Skoronski, the tackle from Northwestern. At 14, he has the New England Patriots taking Quentin Johnston from TCU. And then at the 15th pick, he has the Green Bay Packers taking Luke Musgrave, the tight end out of Oregon State. So we got some options here if you're Nick Caserio. You have some options at some pass catchers for Bryce Young. You got two receivers, Jordan Addison, Quentin Johnston, or Luke Musgrave, the tight end from Oregon State, or you can get some protection for Bryce Young with Peter Skoronski. You're Nick Caserio. You're on the clock at number 12. Which of these four guys are you picking?
Well, as I've said all along when we've been doing this exercise, is the fact that if you're truly going quarterback at the top of the draft, then you're going to give him every chance to succeed with number 12. And so with number 12, I think they're going to continue to focus on offense. So, and I think because that they went with an offensive lineman a year ago, I don't think they're going to go offensive lineman again because they still have Howard. They still have Laremy Tunsil, and they obviously have decisions to make with those, but that's why I don't think they go Skoronski. I think it's between, you know, Addison, Johnston, and Musgrave. And we've seen the tight ends now, the names start to fluctuate a little bit like the receivers. But I think that if you're going to say that there's one guy or two guys at the top of the receiver list that look like they could be a guy that could be the wide receiver one down the road, then it's Jordan Addison. As one of those guys, I'll take Jordan Addison and I'll stay exactly where they are because Lance has mentioned that Quentin Johnston's had some issues with his hands and catching and those kind of things.
So did Joe.
So, well, and that's a great comparison. If we're doing comps.
Joe and Lance?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Joe and Quentin Johnston.
I would take that comparison. I'll take that comp.
So it came down to me between Musgrave and Addison, and I just think the wide receiver is so important.
Going Addison?
Yeah.
I've been trying to stay consistent with going tight end at this spot and getting receiver with the first, like the Texans' first pick in the second round, which is the second pick in the second round. It's becoming more and more difficult for me to do that because I am very intrigued with Jordan Addison. So, like, what tight end's going to be there with the second pick of the second round? But because I've been consistent of give me the tight end first, and then I like the receivers in the second. Zay Flowers, though, is starting to creep in more and more first rounds, which I hate because I was hoping he would slide to the Texans in the second. I got to stay consistent with my tight end option. I like the receivers in the middle of this draft. I feel like you can go tight end here, take the one that you like the most, try to find a really good tight end, and I still think that you're not going to have a huge drop-off at the receiver rookie that you take with that first pick in the second round or even later in this draft. So I got to stick with my tight end. Give me Luke Musgrave, the 6'6", 250-pound beaver. What are you going with, Joe George?
Yeah, I'll stick with mine. I've been on Addison the last couple days. I know I went Kincaid over Addison. That's still the only one I think I would do in terms of pass catchers, so it's Addison for me.
Did you see Matt Miller's comp on Addison?
I did not.
Which intrigues me more about Jordan Addison. It actually intrigues me more about Jackson Smith and Jibba, too. His comp for Jordan Addison was Keenan Allen, which it's like,
I'll take that.
If I can get me a Keenan Allen
for that many
12.
Years to do what he's still doing, yeah, I'll take that.
And, you know, Keenan's obviously a really good athlete, plays in the NFL, but he's not like an uber-athletic Julio Jones type, where he's not the 6'4 frame that runs a 4.3 40. Like, he's a little bit undersized for the position.
Yeah,
he's not
Jones
the fastest
like
at
DK
the position,
Bedcaster.
But he's really good, yeah.
Yeah, but you're talking about a guy that maybe came out looking like Tom Brady when Tom Brady came in the league. He just gets it done.
He
gets
I wouldn't
it done
go that
anyway.
Far.
No, but I'm just saying, he's not like blazing burner speed. He's not totally physical. He's not a monster when you look at him line up against you or a speed demon, but he does everything you need him to do.
Smith and Jibba's comp, which, I mean, again, if we're taking it only on the comps, give me, it's CeeDee Lamb. Like, if you're telling me Jackson, Smith and Jibba, CeeDee Lamb, I'll draft them. Like, I think it's, you know, again, I think it's a reach here, and I think comps are always reaches, always. I think every player comp ever is always a reach. But Man, it makes me a little bit intrigued.
Where are these mock drafts that someone's having the Texans trade back into the first round?
Oh, you want them to do that?
Yeah. Get for three first rounders.
Get like a first receiver who's falling.
I think your receiver or your tight end who like you want to be aggressive and go get. And honestly, it's interesting. So I saw Matt Miller said he has 18 first round grades.
19.
Mm-hmm. Todd McShay said 14.
Oh, really? I need to see McShay's.
So it's 14 players worthy of a first round grade.
I wonder how many of them are likes.
If it's that low, then I think we could see Nick Caserio, if he has all this draft capital, be way more aggressive.
I think that we're going to see Caserio trade up at least twice.
I think once.
I don't think he wants 12 draft picks.
I don't want 12. That's a
lot. I don't think he wants 12 rookies.
And this is the old Daryl Morey. Like, Daryl's always going to make a trade. I just kind of believe that Caserio's going to trade up at least once. If he does it twice, it wouldn't surprise me.
No, he's a Will and Dylan son of a gun. He might trade up four times, Woo! Trade down twice. 713-780-ESPN. Joe George has been working on this ever since he started the show with us. He's been meaning to do it the last two Wednesdays where he's like, you know what? We're not doing it in case you missed it anymore. I got to put my stamp on this show. His stamp on our show is going to be Weird Take Wednesday. That's 2 weeks late, but Weird Take Wednesday next with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.